Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Modern Mind, the podcast that simply aims to explore the minds that inspire modern society by provoking thought and inspiring change. Our guest today is Ned Phillips, who is currently based in Singapore running a fintech business, but is also an avid ultra runner with some incredible insight on the power of being present. Ned has spoken in a TED Talk capacity on this topic. He applies it to his own backyard ultra running experience, which we really unpack today. Just chaos, really, really incredible race, and actually a much more accessible race than you might think. Ned, when we recorded this, was actually prepping for a big effort himself, and you'll hear all about that today. We explore where ultra running crosses over into the business world, how it's benefited Ned personally, what ultimately led him to this position, and what he is looking to achieve in the future. Ned and I have a lot of similarities in the value that we extract and see in ultra running. So for those of you that are listening and curious about how you might be able to extract some of that value in the future, or maybe from the races that you've done in the past, then this is a really fantastic episode to look forward to. At this point, it's important to mention the show's sponsors, as without them, there would be no show. First up, we have Vivo Barefoot, who I've been wearing since January 2019, and you won't really catch me in anything else day to day. I'm kind of morphing into a cartoon character at this point because I'm in the Novus pretty much every day. And whilst I do have a wide array of other options available at the house, because Vivo covers you across pretty much every setting that you could imagine, I've just really chosen the Novus as my weapon of choice day to day. So much so that I've actually stockpiled for the future, as I love them that much. All Vivos are wide, thin, and flexible, and have an open toe box as well as being zero drop, which is much more akin to being, you guessed it, barefoot. And this means that you can build your foot strength from the ground upwards. Study from the University of Liverpool in 2021 has indicated that you can improve your foot strength by up to 60% simply by wearing a pair of Vivos day to day. So if you want to be jacked and tan in your day-to-day life and apply your feet to that equation, then Vivos are the way to go. Generally speaking, my feet feel stronger, more robust, and I feel more in control of how I'm moving, running, and I'm just more comfortable on a day-to-day basis in them. And if you want to give them a go, you can use the code FERGUS20 until the end of 2023 to get 20% off. And if you're listening after that, then sorry, Fergus Vivo will have to do, as it will get you 15% off. Please do let me know how you get on over social media as well, as I would love to hear how much you love them. Next up, we have Days Brewing, whose alcohol-free lager and pale ale are brewed just down the road from me in East Lothian, but sold nationwide. And I like to keep a fully stocked fridge, because when I'm craving a beer at the end of a stressful day, or at the end of a long week, or maybe with a takeaway on a Saturday night after a big training session, dare I say, when I'm inclined to reach for a beer, and there aren't any, but there is an alcohol-free one, I can have all of the ceremony of a beer, all of the ceremony of a pint, all of the enjoyment of a pint without any of the downsides, because it really doesn't take much alcohol for me these days for my cognitive ability, sleep, and therefore overall recovery to be affected. So simply by giving myself access to icy cold Days Lager or pale ale, I am making sure that whenever I have that sort of inclination, I can just have an alcohol-free one, enjoy myself, get all that I want out of it without any of the downsides. That's not to say that I won't have an alcoholic beverage or several every once in a while. It's coming up to Christmas time, which means that that'll be a bit more common. But generally speaking, day to day, week to week, I like to really minimize my alcohol intake for the sake of overall productivity, cognitive ability, sleep, and recovery. So if you'd like to do the same, then you can save yourself 20% off with the code MODERNMIND20 at checkout. And again, do please let me know how you get on over social media. Anyway, without any further ado, let's dive into today's episode. Ned, the power of now, what does this mean to you?
You know, that little TED talk that I did where my daughter came home from school when I was 15, when she was 15, and said, "Dad, do you want to do a TED talk? Because TED is coming to school. And they're asking if any parents would like to do it." And I was like, sure. But every parent will want to say yes, because one of the top schools and yada, yada. And I was like, sure, man, that'll be amazing. Sure, that's be amazing. So I applied and she came home and said, "Dad, you got in. They're going to give you, they want you to do a TED talk." And I was like, wow, that'll be amazing. And so I went and said, "Why did you pick me?" They're like, "You were the only parent who applied." And I'm like, are you serious? Like that? And then, what's your talk on? And without thinking, I went running and And I was doing mindfulness at the time, and I said, the power of the now. And I just blurted it out. So what does it mean to me at the moment, to be honest, in the moment? It was like a statement of what I was thinking at the time, because I was practicing long distance running and thinking about the now. Since then, it's taken on a lot more. It's taken on the idea of how you suffer in the present moment, and why, as long as you can keep your head there, you realize nothing. Suffering is amazing.
So we'll pull on that thread a little bit more as the conversation develops. But I think the first thing to really highlight there is that simply by putting your hand up, proverbially speaking, you opened up an opportunity which has now been seen by 750,000 people. The TED Talk has been viewed, I believe. I'm sure it's opened doors. It's one of the reasons that we've been connected through the sort of trickle down, downstream benefits of having that appear on the internet. And all you did was say, yeah, you know what? I'll chuck my hat in the ring. And I think that in and of itself is a fantastic message to begin with, because so many of us are afraid to chuck our hat in the ring. Did you feel an overwhelming sense of, wow, I'm glad I did that? Or was it just the nature of who you were that you just put yourself forward for things through upbringing, through development, whatever it was? Why were you the one that said, yes, I'm going to put myself forward for this, when thousands of other parents didn't?
I wish I knew. Seriously, Fergus, I was like, sorry, no other parent wants to do a TED Talk? Now, I have a bit of an ego. I like talking to people. I understand not everybody likes standing on stage and talking. I get it. I didn't expect everybody to. In my mind, it's almost the reverse. Like, why wouldn't you? Now, of course, if somebody said, now, to be fair, if they had said, would you like to come and perform a dance on stage and sing a song? I can't dance, I can't sing, I probably would have shied away. So I do get it that it's not for everyone. But as soon as I thought about doing it and thought about talking about running, I was so excited. I was like, I realized things I like in life, people, talking to people and being with people, and running. And now I get to stand in front of people and talk. So yeah, I do wonder, honestly, I still wonder to today, why didn't other people do it? And you're right, like 750,000 people, I didn't expect that to happen. So, you know, everyone's different. You know, why do I like talking? Don't know. Why do I like running a long way? Don't know. But I 1,000,000% know that I like these things. And I just suppose everyone else is doing other things they like, maybe watching Netflix. I don't know.
Maybe. So what you spoke about in the TED Talk, and what we're going to talk about at length today, I'm sure, is the lessons that you've taken from a decorated period of time as an endurance athlete, and how you've translated that into your day-to-day life. But you'll admit yourself that these lessons didn't start trickling through until you were about 28 years old, when you ran your first 100-kilometer race. But your dad was a professor of psychology. So why do you think it took endurance training to be the impetus for you to learn these lessons? Was it a disdain for authority? Was it not taking seriously what your dad was trying to tell you? Or was it just the fact that the vessel for you to learn these lessons was endurance training?
I don't know. Certainly it wasn't. I quite like rules. I don't like being the rule breaker, but I don't like doing the ordinary. So I don't want to break like legal rules, but I like doing weird stuff. Why did it take to 28? I think we grew up quite an unconventional life. So we were self-sufficient. We lived a little kind of like hippie lifestyle. We caught our own food. We were always quite different. So I didn't love it as a kid. You know, I wanted to be normal like the other kids. I was like the weirdos in the woods. And we had, you know, the curly hair and kind of caught our own food. And we were all a bit different. And then I think your first question was the power of the now. Why do I don't know why it took me so long, but I've realized I'm really happiest in the present moment. I'm not very good at planning. I struggle with regret, like we all do. I could have, should have, would have, but I'm really happy just being in the moment. And I think when I did that first 100K race, when somebody said, do you want to run 100K? And I said, yes. And the minute I started that race, I'll never forget. I'm like, oh, this is it, man. This is what I like to do. Like, this is what I like. Why? I don't really know. Like, I used to walk 4 miles to school and back every day. So from the age of 4, I was putting in the training, maybe. Maybe it was my dad telling me to walk to school every day, 4 miles in total, 2 miles there, 2 miles back every day for 14 years in the Scottish winter through the snow. So maybe that was it. But when I was 28, maybe it was just that point in life when I started that race. And, you know, I am now, hey, you've made me think, I'm 56. So half of my life exactly. Oh, I didn't think about that. Ever since I started that, I have never stopped on that journey. And it fills me with more than joy, I can tell you that.
It's funny because we have two main things in common, I'd say. First and foremost, a love for endurance training and the immense value that it gives us as individuals that can be applied to our day-to-day lives. And secondly, we are both from Scotland, born in Scotland, have spent our upbringing in Scotland, but do not in any way, shape or form sound like we are from here.
So exactly.
I think that's something I feel a lot of solidarity in immediately. And for anyone listening that's always wondered, oh, I thought Fergus was English, or I thought he just pretended to be Scottish living there now. No, born here and sound the way I do. So it's nice to have company for once, because normally before these calls, when I speak to somebody I haven't conversed with before, they go, I thought you were Scottish, you sound very English. And I'm like, oh, well, okay, here's the story every single time. We'll circle back to the reality of our first similarity,
yes,
which is the fascination and curiosity that comes with these things. And I think back to the first Zone 2 run that I ever did after years of rugby and powerlifting, and that sort of overwhelming sense of, wow, I feel very present. Present's a popular word these days, but I really did feel very present and very available to myself psychologically on the first ever long, slow, steady, no ego attached run that I ever did. It wasn't in a race setting. My realization sort of came in the first training session that I had to a race setting. But the revelation that came from that is the scales got bigger. But what's amazing for me is that primary emotion, that primary sense of presence is something that I can still tap into now many years later, which is great because it's almost like the anti-materialistic effect, yeah, whereby you buy yourself a 911 and it's fantastic for 6 months and then you think, huh. But there's a GT3 RS out there. I might want that, because that's a bit faster, and that'll give me the same emotion. And you're always chasing that next ring in the ladder. And whilst yes, there's an element to that with endurance training and events, and obviously the scale of, well, you've ran a marathon, let's run 50K. Yep. Okay, let's run 100. Let's run 100 miles all the way up. We're both about to do very silly things next year, but and that's the scale that comes with it. But the essence, the core of it, I think is something we really have similar beliefs on, which is that it's just curiosity and presence that makes it valuable. How you manifest that into what event, into what distance, is up to the individual and their individual focus points. But the actual mechanism that we're tapping into as human beings, I think, is what I think gets lost in translation with these discussions, because that is what we should focus on and why I believe everybody should push themselves to their relative distance within the context of what they're training for, et cetera, because the lessons are fairly universally applicable.
It is this, you know, I do wonder, like I often get asked, oh, why do you do it, right? And I don't really, you know, and I honestly, like I was on Colin's show and he asked me, it's like, I don't honestly know. But what I do know is I adore it. Like anything, you do things you love, right? Whether you love riding a bike or watching TV or reading a book or knitting or running or whatever it is. But what I notice is when I run, right, particularly, so you know who Courtney Dolwater is, the absolute queen of,
yep,
savage, like savage. But what a, you, and I've not met her, so I'm going on what I see, you know, what a beautiful human she is, right? Smiling and happy. And I don't know if you've seen her on Rogan. And Rogan kept asking her, where's your demon? Where's your demon? Like, you must have a demon to hurt so much. She said, no, Joe, I don't have a demon. She's like, what is it? She's like, inside the pain cave, inside that place where you're suffering, it is a privilege to be in there. And I really resonated when she said that. Because when people say, it's present and I enjoy it, that bit when I'm really inside the pain cave and really in the place where this really, really is hard, what a privilege that you can be in there. What an absolute privilege that you're about to go out and run a long way. Isn't that amazing that that's what you do to suffer? And then the coolest thing is, once you get into that cave, Courtney describes it this way. When she gets in, and the pain cave, for I hope most listeners know, is that place where your brain and body are in the place where theoretically you should stop. But you know if you press on, there will be great joy, ultimately. And she says, I get into the pain cave. I look around and say, hello, pain cave. And she and the pain cave says, welcome back, Courtney. And she says, hello, I'm here to make the pain cave a bit bigger. And the pain cave says, please do. And she chips away with great joy at making this place that she loves even bigger. And when you think about it in that way, it's so different because everyone says, surely when you get to a place where it really hurts, you want to stop. And I'm like, no, no, I want to go in. Because the more you go in, the more joy in the suffering, because it's a privileged place to be. And I love that thought. And if I could, I don't want to sit in the pain cave all day, but it's such a beautiful place to be. It really is.
I think the key thing there as well is it's suffering that we have committed to and worked towards and almost earned, quote unquote.
Mm.
And that's why it's such a privilege, and why the phrase pressure is a privilege is so common in sort of C-suite boards and sort of special forces operators and things like that, because you haven't had an HGV drive into the side of your house and suddenly the suffering that goes with immense loss of the,
it's a different
totally. Form of suffering in this sense. It's sort of suffering on your own terms. That's why it's so valuable, because there's so many steps along the way where you could have not got there, and you have. You then get there, and then you stay a little bit longer when the easier thing to do is to not. And then actually, more often than not, if you stay in there long enough, you kind of pop out the other side and go, oh, things are okay, albeit maybe temporary. Yeah. Because on ultras, I know I felt great, and then I felt terrible, and then I felt great again. And then you think, essentially, the main thing is no one feeling lasts forever. And the more you can ride that roller coaster, the more comfortable with that reality you can be, and therefore the more exposed you can be to it, the more you can have faith and confidence in it, and the more you can apply that to day-to-day life.
They say in an ultra, if you feel shit, wait half an hour, you'll feel good. And if you feel good, wait half an hour, you'll feel shit. It's like life. Like, I run a startup as well. It's like, I'm a hero. I'm terrible. I'm a hero. You know, it's you know, that, as you say, we're not suffering in the real term. We're privileged suffering. And the learnings, the deep joy that you get inside is way more than this physical. Sure, like, what don't I like about the suffering? It's not the muscular. It's not the it's not the mental. And this is just stupid, but you know this because you're it's the chafing. If I could get rid of chafing, then ultra would be a beautiful, beautiful sport. You know, the chafing sometimes takes the edge off a little bit because it's the opposite of fun. But each of these, if you could just compartmentalize that, and people always are drawn up, like, let's step back from suffering. Oh, if it hurts, keep away. You know, stay safe. Oh, it's okay. Be comfortable. Walk away from the edge. But the edge is the place. Like, and I know I get enthused by this, and it's not for everybody. But once you get to that edge, and everybody can get there, because if you've never run a 5K and you started at 2K, 5K is your edge. That's okay, right? That's okay, right? Yep. Ultra is different in everyone's mind. And the world would be a better place if we all went out there, and all of us who could suffer in a privileged way, the world would be a better place if we could.
I agree. And I think that there's a key point there, which is that essentially ultra, marathon, all these terms are
totally
arbitrary in the grand scheme of things, whereby they're human creations. And I think that the core tenet for everybody should be development, progression, being better than yesterday, just simply building from where you were to where you want to get to. And the labels that we like to attach to that along the way, yes, it means we can fit into neat categories, but it's important not to lose sight of the fact that they are just labels and they are just categories. Yeah. And what matters most is who you are today versus
yesterday.
And look,
it doesn't have to be. And this is the thing. Like, you get asked, oh, so you're a ultra athlete? No, I'm just a dude who runs. Like, I eat shit. I eat chocolate and ice cream, which I shouldn't. I sometimes drink too much. I try not to. The running. It's an addiction, right? Let's be clear, right? Like, you know, it's an addiction. Like, the idea that I couldn't run and couldn't suffer would kill me, right? And I don't do it so I can eat more cakes, although I like cakes a lot, you know. But it's not, you know, you worry. Like, I don't want people to think, gee, you've got to be that committed to go down that road. You do not, right? Like, it is not. Of course, you want to get better. You have to do better to yourself. But it's not a straight line. It's like an ultra, right? You want to get better, but you don't get better every day. But in saying that, I'm 56, and I think I'm the getting close to the best ultra athlete I've been.
Interesting. Because a lot of data that supports the development and performances of Ironman athletes in that setting and the age group categories that go with it. But we won't get bogged down in that detail because I'm sure most people at this point are thinking, oh no, we're going to go down a data rabbit hole, which we won't do. Leave the endurance athletes to the endurance athletes and everybody else listening. Stick with us because we're not going to talk about training peaks and heart rate zones in detail that you don't care about at this point.
No.
But rather, I think what we're going to do first of all is extract the key lessons that you took away from that first 100K. And what came next in terms of your endurance training, endurance events, the fascination that came with it, because there's a lot that's happened, but I think those first lessons are important to set the scene for what follows.
Okay, first lesson, if you want to run 100K, make Vaseline your friend, number one, right? Go out, buy Vaseline, and put it everywhere, because on my first event, at 80K, I was wearing a cotton t-shirt, and I had forgot to put Vaseline. I didn't know to put Vaseline on my nipples because no one tells you these things, right? It's not something that you're equipped with in life. And I had so much blood running down from my nipples down my shirt that I had a stream of blood like coming down the front of me. And it hurt. And it also hurt in my private areas. And I had blood running down my thighs. And it was horrid. And now, so number one, if you're going to run a long way, use a lot of Vaseline. That's a lesson. Put that in your things to learn. The other lesson I took away was, God, it was amazing. Like, it was so different, so fun. I did it in a group. There was a team of four of us, only three finished, with one of my best friends, Rob Hart, who went on to do crazy stuff, climb the seven summits, Everest. Dude is an absolute killer. And I realized, like, if I wanted to drop out, he wanted to drop out. Like, you just want to. You don't have to. Unless you break your leg. Then you got to stop. The biggest learning, apart from Vaseline, is that your mind is a wild thing, like a truly wild, wild thing that my mind's got better. Now I really know I don't have to stop. Like, I really know it. Like, I've done it enough. Like, I can keep doing it, right? Like, I know. And that was the biggest thing to learn. I mean, this podcast is called Mind Over Matter. It's not Mind Over Matter. It's just... After, like, it was in the hills. It took like 16 hours. And I remember I was like at hour 15. I was like, this sucks. And then Rob was like, no, dude, this is awesome. And just by saying that, I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. This is awesome. And everything suddenly was awesome. Just because he told me. It's like nuts. It's so, that's the thing you learn. You can reframe it so quickly in your mind. And that's, it's so good to be able to do that. That was the main thing I learned.
Did you find that you could immediately translate that into a day-to-day / work setting? Because reframing, I think one of the most valuable things about training in general, whether it's powerlifting, sports, five-a-side on a Wednesday, the commitment, the discipline, the lessons that you learn from it, all the things that go into each individual sport, there's a lot of threads of DNA that run through all of them, but the things that can be translated, the real value of those is if you can translate them into settings out with the settings in which you learn them. But that takes time. That takes exposure and an understanding of how you can do that. So after the first 100K, that revelation on reframing your mindset, was that something that you could immediately reframe into a work setting, into a personal life setting, or did that take a bit more practice?
It's a good, I don't remember, because now, as we've established, it was half my life ago because I'm 56 and it was 28. So I don't, now I'm nearly a pensioner. I don't remember. But I would say to a degree, yes. And at the same time, there's my favorite book in the world called The Hard Way, by an author called Mark Jenkins, who's done the wildest adventures. He's cycled across Russia in winter. He's climbed all the mountains. He's done all the hard stuff. And inside there, he has a phrase which I did adopt. And I don't know if I adopted it right after this race, but he says, if you're on an adventure, climbing a mountain or trekking in the wilds, and you've been going for a week and it's cold and it's raining and you've got no food and everything hurts, and you're with a group, it's not acceptable to whine. It's acceptable to say nothing, but it is admirable to revel in it. But that's your own choice, right? And I remember thinking, sure, things suck. Don't complain. Like, of course you can figure it out, but complaining to the group isn't going to help. Saying nothing is okay. But imagine you could revel in it. And I love that. So that's the biggest takeaway, right? You can literally change your mind, right? I'm not saying everything's perfect. I understand life's hard and mental health is a massive thing and it's not for everybody. But if you are able to just say, hey, it's all right, man, let's go. And then not everybody's able to. I understand that. That was the biggest thing I got out of running 100K. When Rob said to me, dude, this is awesome at K90, I'm like, oh, wow, you're right. This is awesome. And you can use that in real life.
I wholeheartedly agree. It's not actually a statement I'd heard before. I've heard of the book. I haven't actually read the book in full. I've listened to bits and bobs of it, but yeah, I've never clocked that as a phrase. I think that's great. But what I will add as a caveat is from my experience, whether this is the people I spend my time with, is if you're going to complain, make sure it's humorous,
Yeah.
because that almost acts as revelry. So I can think back to the amount of times I've looked Johnny, who's often supported me on races, and gone, oh, this is fucking shit, isn't it?
That's
And he's gone, well, you probably deserve it, you prick. And I go, ha ha, and just move on. Because it's
yes.
kind of this group mentality of, yeah, it is a bit rough, but you chose to do this. And actually, if you can find a way to smile right now, that is the same thing as revelry. So whining, complaining, that doesn't help anyone, not least yourself. But if it can be reframed as something that can actually act as a bit of a morale booster through
Totally.
humor, it can be very valuable. And just be aware that the longer and more sleep deprived you come, probably the worse and potentially darker that humor will also go. So
That humor,
yeah,
that
just make
humor.
sure you trust the people you're around.
But that humor, you're right. Like, you can complain humorously, right? Like, it adds to the group, right? Like, if it adds to the group, then it's fantastic, right? Like, you're right. I think that's that British sarcasm use of it, right? You can, is it adding momentum and energy to yourself or to the group? And again, that's a life thing, right? Like, I know it can't always be. I understand that, for a lot of people, it's hard to do it. But if you can add good mental energy to a situation, you should. And do you learn that via suffering? I think so.
I think so too. I think so too. So that was your first dipping of your toe, probably a blistered one, into the world of ultra running. And what followed is many, many years of doing more of that. But I think the real turning point for you was a coach, a specific coach who changed your mindset even further on the objectivity, or rather the subjectivity of your worldview on this, where it was previously quite objective. So just talk us through that.
We people have egos, right? We all do. And I remember thinking, I got this. I was trying to go to Kona Ironman, so we're not going to talk about training splits, although if this was 20 years ago, man, I would have got into this. We could have talked about zones and bikes and all that shit. But I was trying to go to Kona and I just thought, I can do this, man. Like, I can do this, for people who are not sure, Kona's the world championships of Ironman racing, yada, yada, yada. And it was just my own stupidity. I couldn't get out my own way. I was like, I'm awesome. I can do this, right? And it's just play stupidity. And I got a coach called Grant Giles, and he was just amazing. And he said, physically, you can get there. And after talking to him a while, he said, mentally, you'll never get there. And I was like, I couldn't understand what he meant. I'm like, what do you mean? Physically, mentally, like mentally, I'm fine, right? And he didn't mean I was mentally unwell. What he meant was, you're so busy thinking about the outcome, you're not training in the moment. Like, you're not every swim stroke, take a swim stroke, think about it. Every pedal stroke, every piece of running. And he was honestly like, if any of you want to follow a guy who thinks deeply about how the mind can overcome the body. Anyway, so I got him as a coach, and I'll never forget, I was on a group ride in Singapore, and there was 15 of us, and it was all blokes, and we're all, think we're awesome. And we went to be training slow, but one dude shot off from the front, right? And then 12 other dudes went off to catch him because, hey, you can't have the dude riding off the front. I want to show him who's the man, right? And I used to go and chase him, and I stopped and I waited, and there was three of us in the group that, well, four including me. And as I went in the group that went slowly, these guys were all people, Mark Jansen, Asad Atamimi, and Ian Tate. They'd all been to Kona before. And two of them were working with Grant Giles. And I was like, oh my God, these are the dudes. It's not with the dudes up the road, it's with the dudes who are using their brains. And that was the turning point. I'm like, holy shit, if I just use my brain, I'll get there. And honestly, like I'll never forget that bike ride. I'm like, oh, you've got to think. And it really changed. And Grant was a miracle. You know, I hate to say changed my life, but changed my life quite a bit, man. And then I started engaging my brain, which was rare for me.
Getting out your own way is the real crux of that for me, because you mentioned it in that context before you'd actually explained the revelation. But getting in your own way from a recreational athlete point of view is the biggest thing. People do
Totally.
not want to not be, people have a racing mentality, not a training mentality, and they're separate things, which is one is the sort of red line hard work stuff which you apply on race day, and the rest is just doing the honest work. It's like, you can't, if you're starting a business, you can't unfortunately just do all of the things that you want to do from day one, unless you're lucky enough to have immense amounts of capital to be able to do so. For the first year, you're probably gonna have to do the bookkeeping. You're probably gonna have to do this. You're probably gonna have to pack orders, all these things. And that is the honest grunt work that gets you to be able to be in the position 2 years, 3 years down the road where you could be focusing on the things that you want to be doing. And that's what the non-glamorous drills, pedal stroke drills, turbo trainer sessions are. And if you can't be comfortable doing that, which I think is just abandoning the ego,
Correct.
then you will not get to the place that you want to get to, driven by the ambition of said ego. So ego isn't a bad thing inherently. Ego's great for calibrating ambition, setting clear goals, but to be honest to those goals and to do the work to achieve them, I very much see it as fully abandoning your ego where possible. At the very least, becoming comfortable with the parameters of it. Because for you, that must have been, I mean, it was the thing that ultimately allowed you to sort of adjust your training to get you to the end goal. And in the process, you've clearly become much more present, much more peaceful with your own ego, and you're much more open to new ideas. And I know that you've said, I think it was in the TED talk, that you were previously somebody that wouldn't, if something wasn't tangible, you didn't believe in it flat out. That was your
Totally.
rule. That was your compass for things. Whereas the process of doing so has opened you up to the idea that actually the intangibles are something to explore. And I can only assume a lot of intangibles now make you the person that you are today.
Is it because you get old, right? I got called wizened the other day, and I can't work out if that's a compliment or not. Am I a wizard? Am I old? Do I look old? What is it? So maybe as we all get old, our ego gets away. You learn things. I have this phrase I use a lot: strong opinions loosely held. I used to have strong opinions strongly held, i.e., if I can't feel it, touch it, see it, it doesn't exist. Literally, I think I've changed 180 degrees. You can absolutely doesn't have to see it. You can almost will it into existence. There are other life forces out there. You can create things just by making them happen. And so, yeah, like I think there was a big turning point. Like it was a bit ego driven because by using that now, I got to Kona, which was my ego. Because who really cares if you go to Kona, right? Really, like no one really cares, right? Nobody loves you any less or more if you do or you don't, right? What the hell? But of course, in your own brain, like, oh, look at me, I'm a legend. I'm in a Kona, you know? And, you know, like I tried to break 3 hours in a marathon, I went 302. No one cares. No one cares. Like I care, but no one cares, right? And I think that's why I love Ultra so deeply today because. Whether I run 100K or 100 miles or 200K or 200 miles, which I'm about to try and do, no one really cares, right? And that ego of don't get out your own way, do it because you love it. And if you love it, it'll be all right. And of course, I want to do better. I still have ego inside me. So, but yeah, I think it was the greatest thing. Learning to get out your own way is not an easy task.
So without just listing a long year of endurance events, we'll focus in on a few. So I'll kick things off by asking you, which is the one that sticks in your memory the most, whether for good reason or bad?
Backyard Ultra in the Singapore World Champ in the world for the World Championships of Backyard Ultra. I was in the Singapore team. I ran 187K in 28 hours. I came third in Singapore, and I could not have felt more deeply joyful if I tried.
So, for those listening that might not be aware, just give us some context on Backyard Ultra, because it's very specific as a race mechanic. And it's something that you hear for the first time, and you're like, what, really?
It is
nah But yep, it's a thing, and it is a pretty, pretty savage thing.
It is. And I'm going to say to this, Fergus, we were talking before we came on, like, you make video, you make content, right? And you hope it's not just ultra nuts and endurance nuts who consume it, it's other people. I have found, we have found that Backyard Ultra is one of the most accessible things to non-runners, non-endurance people. I know this because when I do it and I put it on Facebook, the amount of non-runners are like, holy shit, dude, that? When you run a marathon or 100K, no one cares. So what is it? You run 6.7K an hour, on the hour, every hour, until there's only one person left. So let's say 100 people enter the race. There's a loop. You meet at a certain place. There's a 6.71K loop, and you run it. And let's say you can run it in 50 minutes. You run back to the same place. You have 10 minutes to rest before, on the hour, you must be at the start line and go again. And every completed loop counts. And the reason it's 6.71K is that comes up to 160K in 24 hours, which to those who still do metric is 100 miles. And the idea is 100 miles in a day is an amazing round number. And so you only stop when you want to stop. You decide how deep you want to go. Only you know. And you know what they say? The only loser is the winner, because the winner never found how deep they can go. And they're the only loser on the day. It's a beautiful world.
It's the exact antithesis of Talladega Nights, Ricky Bobby, if you ain't first, you're last. It's kind of, in this case, if you're first, you are last, in fact, which is kind of a pretty upsetting paradox. But they also say that the race doesn't begin until 24 hours if you're doing it to be competitive.
That's true.
So talk us through your experience of covering, what was it, 186K, you said? 187?
100, yeah, so 20. So this was my fourth Backyard Ultra. So Backyard Ultra was created by a man called Lazarus Lake in Tennessee. He's the man behind Barkley Marathons. He's a race director who believes only by not finishing do you achieve anything. Finishing accomplishes you nothing. You must fail. So he builds races where you will suffer and fail, because that is what is good. So this race, his idea, it's spread like wildfire. Last 3 or 4 years, it has blown up. So this is my fourth effort. I did my first, actually, during COVID. There was a global Backyard Ultra on your treadmills in your bedrooms. 2,500 people got on their treadmills at the same time over one huge Zoom call, and we all pounded. And you had to do 6.7K on your treadmill, then stop for 5, 10, however many minutes, and start again. I came 38th out of the 2,500 I ran. How far did I run? 22 loops, so just under 24. I ran 147K in my bedroom on a treadmill during COVID. It was so cool. And then I did another one, a few. And the way that the world championship works is, coming up next week is the individual world champs every year, where the top 75 backyard guys go to Lazarus Lake's backyard in his farm. That's why it's called Backyard. It's in his farm. And they will attempt to go as far as they can, which will be over 100 hours this year, I believe. The alternate years, every country selects, who does backyard, there's about 40 of us, selects their best 15 backyard ultra runners. And we all at the same time compete within country to find the winner, and then total loops between all of us. And so I was selected for Singapore. I was hoping to do well. I got through 24 hours, got to 28. And on the 28th, there was only three of us left. So technically I was third. And that experience, at loop 7, I hurt my knee. I thought I was going to have to drop out. At loop 14, I hurt my hip. At loop 24, I was vomiting everywhere. And I wrote a little report. I've never experienced such happiness, joy, apart from the obvious things like getting married and having kids, in a running race. Because as each person dropped out, and maybe this is the ego, Fergus, maybe the ego is still sitting there. As each person drops out, I'm like, whoa, I'm 14th. Whoa, I'm 12th. Whoa, I'm 10th. And I'm the oldest dude on the line, right? Whoa, I'm 5th. Whoa, I'm 4th. And then I'll never forget, at loop 27, when there was only four of us left, at one point, two of the guys went into a bathroom on the way around, and I couldn't see the leader. And I'm like, what? What? Has everyone else dropped out? Like, am I going to win this thing? I'm like, let's fucking go, man. Let's go. And of course I didn't. But that experience was, I used my brain, man. Like, I went, that's as deep as I've gone. Like, I was broken as. But when I hobbled off the start line on loop 29, it took me 15 minutes to do the first K. And I'm like, all right, that's it. I'm cooked, uh-oh, man.
Yeah. That could be a problem. That could be a problem. But it's a great setup. And I think it's the fact that you can do four loops, five loops, and learn as much as the person that does 37, because it's an entirely relative scale, which is where Laz has absolutely nailed his just cigarette smoking personality to really embody what I think is good about these things. There's a lot of ego on the internet around these things now. I think it detracts from the value of them. And ego is going to put people off trying it. And my whole ethos on this is there is a lot of value in a lot of different disciplines out there for people to explore. So we should all collectively be doing our best to reduce the barrier to entry for people that haven't yet experienced the things that we personally find valuable in our own lives. So by being too egotistical or being too narrow-minded, you're not doing that.
Imagine you've only ever run 5K in your life. That's the furthest you've run. You go to a backyard and you do the 6.7, and then you find the power to do another loop. For you, that's amazing. Like, so backyard can be amazing at two loops. As mentioned, the world record right now is 101 hours. We're going into the fifth day. The fifth day. That's 677K. But it doesn't matter. You can push yourself and find your limit. And it's truly and here's what I've seen, and I'm gonna make a prediction, Fergus, on your show. If Ultra ever gets to the Olympics, which I don't want it to, because our world is weird and small and different, but if it ever did, this is the format. You know why? Because imagine at the Olympics, you could just, day one, day two, when everyone's gone to bed, you wake up and these lunatics are still going. Day three, faster, better, stronger. These lunatics are still going on day four. And people are like, who's going to break first? Who's going to keep going? I predict in 20 years' time, when they have Ultra at the Olympics, it'll be backyard.
I wonder if somebody will ever go a week. They probably will, because 10, 15 years ago, people would have been sitting here saying, I wonder if anyone's ever going to run a sub-2 marathon. Or pre-Roger Bannister, I wonder if anyone's ever going to run a sub-4-minute mile. And lo and behold, as we've evolved, we've got faster, we've gone further, all these things. So I think at some point somebody will run for a week in a backyard ultra, which is a terrifying thought, and I can't even begin to imagine the hallucinations that will go with it. But I look forward to seeing it.
Not only a few years ago in backyard, the idea of 100 seemed mind-blowing. So think about this, people. You run 6.7K every hour. On average, these guys do it in 48 to 50 minutes. They have 10 minutes to sit, rest, have a little 5-minute power snooze, go to the bathroom, gels, get up again. Like, you can't have a bad hour. It's not like an ultra where you can rest for an hour. If you're doing a 100-mile run, you can take an hour break, clean everything up. If you're not on the line, exactly on the hour, you can't start 1 minute late, one second late, if you're not on that. And 101. And so even a few years ago, the idea of 100 was too far. Can we go a week? Like, can you go a week without sleep? We've talked about hallucinating. I don't know if you've ever got to the hallucinating stage. It's a scary world, man.
It's quite fun in a way, though, because it's so incomprehensible. And I think what people don't necessarily understand, well, my experience anyway, obviously everyone's different here, but it's not like you're seeing, it's not like you're on an acid trip or anything. It's not like you're just seeing a different world, but your brain, probably just due to being so cognitively stretched, is essentially reframing things that are actually there into things that aren't. And I think that's the experience I've had with it anyway, is you kind of see, I saw a wall with a tree hanging over it with a car sort of in the distance that was shaped like this. And I kept seeing Dick Dastardly on the Double Brutal Extreme Triathlon last year. And it just got to the point where I was just giggling to myself. And why the fuck is Dick Dastardly where my brain's taking me to? This is so weird. And there'd be times where I'd be squinting and sort of looking and being like, I know that isn't a troll from Lord of the Rings, but I keep looking at it and... It is a troll from, oh, no. It's okay. It's a stack of bricks, and then there's a bush over the back of it. And yeah, okay, cool, yeah. So, but it's a weird place to get to. But again, the irony is you've You've got yourself there through sweat equity. So it's kind of it's a privileged position to be in. What a strange thing to say. It's a privileged position to be scared of trolls from Lord of the Rings and Dick Dastardly when you're sleep deprived and experiencing something that most people probably don't even begin to have a concept of. But that is why I really enjoy bringing this to life online, because I love sort of trying to bring the concept to life so that if in 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, 5 years from now, somebody said, you know what, that planted a seed in my brain that's got me to the point where I'm sort of experiencing the same thing. In my mind, that'd be really cool. So,
do you think
hallucinations, weird place to get to.
Do you think it is, and I've thought about this, do you think it's, you feel almost proud of yourself that you pushed yourself so hard you can see a hallucination? You know what I mean? I think there's a little bit of that, able to get there, right?
I think so. And this is bordering on a bit toxic here, but I remember thinking back to rugby training sessions where it could almost be a badge of honor if you made yourself throw up because you worked so hard, because you essentially proved that you actually pushed your body to its absolute capacity in a session that was designed to do exactly that. So therefore you're sort of, it's not something I'm encouraging, but the sort of ego within us in a rugby setting, which is a high performance, high demand, egoed up sport for the most part. Yeah, I think there is definitely a part of you can look at it proudly, I think, because essentially it's not something you do every day. But if when you need to tap into it, you can push yourself to the point that you can supersede your psychology physiologically, then essentially your physiology is sending messages to your brain to be like, stop this. And if you can override that, then you have a very good awareness of capabilities, boundaries, etc.
It's funny, you say sweat equity, which is startup land and also running land, but this idea of, can you go past your brain? Do you know who Tim Noakes is, the central governor? Have you read Tim Noakes?
Central governance theory, isn't it? Yeah.
Correct, that your brain will stop you. And you're right, you don't want to hurt yourself. But you can, how far can you tip into the little central governor, right? Like, I like this, it's like Courtney's pain cave. I want to go to the central governor, give him a little flick and go, hey, and you don't want to do too much. But that amazing place where you can be, oh my God, like I can see into this little world that I've worked so hard to get to. And you know, you're right, it shouldn't be toxic. But I think about it now, like the reason I want to run further, and there's no way of saying this without sounding like a douchebag, so forgive me, and I'm just saying, like, I know if I run 100K now, that's not gonna get to my pain cave. So, because I've dug in there before, right? So I want to go and test what the central governor is. That's why Backyard's so amazing, because you can dig in, you know, you want to, it's not about doing more, but that place is so amazing. And you're right, it's not, oh, can I do more than that person or whatever? There's an addiction in there. There's a little, I know there's a little special drug in the pain cave. But when you go in, you're like, holy shit, this is really, really good and bad, all in the same way. And that's why I think ultras, like I'm going to do it till I'm 100, man. Like I don't think I'll be getting as far when I'm 100, but I want to keep doing it till then, because it's special in there.
And every new environment you do it in, every new person you meet along the way, every new country, every new climate is a different spin on the same mechanism. And I think that's why it's really cool. And actually, it's a great way to explore new places. I think, it's Snowdonia, the Double Brutal, the Kelpman, which I've done twice now. Torridon in Scotland is a harsh, harsh place.
Yes.
And to do a triathlon through it is just such a strange concept, but it's one that you think, well, yeah, me and 200 other odd people did it in 2022 in the worst weather settings the race has ever seen and got to the end of it. And that's just silly, really. It's just bloody silly, isn't it, to be very British for a second as I blow tea, blow steam away from my tea. I think that is the beauty of it, is there's lots of ways that you can sort of not constantly chase the dragon, which can swing into a negative side of things as well, because you can be avoiding things that you should actually be confronting. And if you are treating it as addiction and it's just rolling from one thing to the next without any time to reflect or illuminate the lessons that you've been taught along the way, then that is actually not something that I would advocate for. I advocate for people pushing their limits and learning from it, but the key detail being learning from it and reflecting on it rather than just pushing, 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 because you're hiding.
Totally. Look, I agree. Like, there's addiction in this, right? This isn't all pretty, right? Like there's definitely, you look at some people in Ultra, it's 100% not all. But if you know Ray Sahabis, that he was like a former addict, turned to running, talks a lot about it. Marshall Ulrich, there's a lot of these guys, and yeah, it ain't all pretty. Like, and I agree, like, we all look at Goggins. I don't think he's a role model. He doesn't have to be Goggins' way. There's like Courtney is the perfect antidote to that. She's this like, yay, candy munching, incredibly fantastic, beautiful personality. Or yay, let's do this for love and peace and happiness and let's go. So yeah, you have to take it in the right way, because I think if you take it down the wrong road, it's not always healthy.
Agreed, agreed. And yeah, personally, I think Goggins' attitude and presentation online can validate people or give them an avenue to validate themselves where actually they might be better confronting the things that forced them to need that validation in the first place. Obviously, making some assumptions and generalizations there, but I think, yeah, I think there's an individual lens that needs to be applied to anything that is Goggins is saying. And I think that is often lost in translation. But I've done enough talking on that in the past, so I won't go down that rabbit hole again this time round. So I
Fair enough.
think for a bit of context before I sort of ask a specific question, your career in financial technology began in 1999, I think I'm correct in saying, and obviously the landscape has evolved an awful lot since then. But throughout balancing a career in financial technology, you have been doing all the ultra endurance endeavors and reflection on said endeavors that we've discussed. The chief executive and endurance athlete combination is probably something that most people would label as a sacrifice or antisocial or self-destructive or limiting or boring or whatever you. There's lots of phrases that could be chucked at it, I think, for people that don't necessarily understand things and would see it as a hindrance to day-to-day life. Whereas I'm confident that you see it as a sort of performance enhancer rather than a hindrance. And I'm going to ask you why you think that is from your personal perspective. But if we look at chief execs, we look at high performing athletes, we look at people that are sort of within regular definition successful, there tends to be sacrifice and discipline and commitment out with the things that people associate their success with. So what is your take on that reality these days? Because you've been doing this for the best part of, well, 28 years almost. Obviously, there's been periods where it's been more focused, the career's been more demanding, you're running a startup currently, you've consulted for high-level security stuff in financial technology in Asia as a region. There's a lot of stuff that's been going on, the pressure will have got higher, but throughout that you have always done endurance challenges. Why?
I would love to give you. I'm gonna need to sit on a couch for some of this. I think in. Okay, maybe two answers. I think it just kind of happened, right? I truly follow this. You do your best every day, and it will be what it will be. Like, because everybody, it will be what it will be, right? So I didn't come to this with a playbook on. Let me be a CEO and be an ultra endurance runner and all of this. I literally. So there's two things that I keep coming back to, two things I love, humans and running, right? And when you love humans, right? I'm a sales guy, right? And what happens when you're a sales guy and you love humans, you talk to everybody. So when they want to promote somebody, the person they promote is the person that they've heard from. Now, that's not always the best. I might not have always been the right guy to be the CEO, but I'm always there. Like the beginning of the conversation, I put my hand up, right? And I found pretty quickly, if you put your hand up enough, people will promote you. So I maybe got promoted past my capability level early, but then I'm like, no, like I can do this. Like I can really, like I can do this. So I started doing it, and yes, it's stressful, but it becomes normalized, right? I don't think, look, I don't know, well, I do know lots of CEOs. I think for a lot of them, it's just normal. You normalize it in the same way that I've normalized running 100K. So every weekend, I go out and run a marathon, not because it's a marathon, I just like it, and it's normal. I feel abnormal if I don't go out and run 40 or 50K on a Sunday morning, And if I don't, my weekend feels crappy. And that's not normal, right? So to the question, do I think they go hand in hand? Maybe. But I think whatever you do, it becomes normalized. So being a CEO, yeah, it's a lot of fun. except in a startup, because you don't get paid shit. If you're working for a corporate and you're a startup, you get paid a lot, which is quite nice. Of course, you've got ego. You get adulation if you do it right. You get shit if you do it wrong, which I'm okay with, because if you do it wrong, it's on you. And then, you know, I do think the running, particularly a long way, really helps, because you get stresses in your life and running takes away some of those stresses. So, you know, of course, could you be a CEO and not do any exercise? Of course you can. But an interesting study. If you're a CEO and you don't exercise, do you die sooner? I think so. I really do think so. For me, it was just a unique balance of life that I love both of them. I like people. And if you like people, you get promoted. You end up as a CEO, and I like running. And the two of them go hand in hand. So for me, I think it was more happenstance, but I think they complement each other pretty well.
You haven't asked for it, nor am I necessarily informed to give it, but I'm gonna make a suggestion as to why I think it might be the case, and why more and more of it is happening, and why you see these ridiculous, I get up at 4 a.m. and jump in an ice bath for an hour CEO routines online, where people often forget that actually the reason they're doing that now is because they've made all their money and now can do those things. But yeah, not to be cynical before I've even said my piece, but I think the gray area of stress and pressure at a C-suite level can be very, very overwhelming, but you become very comfortable at being stressed and being overwhelmed. But the gray area of it, because you're subject to markets, you're subject to other employees, you're subject to board reports, you're subject to all these things that go into it, you are not in control, but you are comfortable with being out of control and under pressure. Physical exercise, whether it's ultra running, whether it's training, whether it's Ironman, whatever it might be, is high pressure, high commitment, high demand, but it's black and white. And I think what that does for high performers, for those that are under pressure, is calibrate and point that stress in a clear direction in an environment that they often can't do so. So once you're comfortable being under pressure, once you're comfortable waking up feeling stressed every day, knowing that the unpredictables are coming, you are then free to put yourself in stressful situations on your terms and will get an awful amount from it because it is black and white. And as human beings, we like black and white because it's predictable. You know what you get out, what you put in. There are clear defining parameters around it. And that gives a translation of the mechanism that you know and exist within into something on your terms, which means that you can have more tangible day-to-day wins in an industry, an environment, in a job where your wins might often be a lot more delayed in their gratification. That's my perspective on why I think this is the alignment these days.
That's really good, man. Seriously, like I listen intently to that. That's really good. Because when I go for my Sunday run, I know what the outcome is. Like it's stressor, but I know if I run 40K, I'm going to be this tired and I know how it's going to feel, and it's stress, but it's must. I think you nailed it. Seriously. Like I really do, because in my job, I can work really hard and the outcome can be shit.
That's it. Isn't
but
it?
If I run,
we like as human beings, not having shit outcomes. And I think it's a great way. But also, if you're only used to existing in a high-pressure environment, I've heard you say it before, I very much empathize. Relaxing, quote-unquote, in a conventional understanding or definition, is difficult. It's uncomfortable. And actually, relaxing is still quite high intensity, but just in a different setting. So I think the relaxation, once you are comfortable and committed to being in a high pressure environment pretty much all the time. If you're at a level where essentially your time is not your own, you can be phoned by a board, you can be phoned by investors at any time of the day, et cetera, I think you need calibration points where you are feeling hounded, but by stresses that are under your control. And I think that's why there's more and more of a trend these days of high performing individuals in a corporate setting, in a business setting, often are the ones that are doing a lot of things out with that setting too.
That's honestly, dude, I think you, honestly, that's really, I hadn't really thought about that. Like, cause I get asked, oh, why'd you like to go for a long run? I You're right. It's suffering on my terms. I did a 12-hour race the other day. It's like a 12-hour half marathon run in 12 hours. And I remember being at like hour eight. I remember thinking, I know it's only 4 more hours, right? And I know the outcome. And I know I'm not going to stop. And like, this is on me. And like, it doesn't, like, I didn't have to check an investor or payroll or this or, and I hadn't really thought about it. You're right. Like, I can stress on my own level, on my own terms. And yeah, I wonder that I like doing more because I get more stress on my own terms, which makes me feel better about the shitty stress I have on the stuff that even if I work really hard, I might not get a good outcome. I might get a good outcome. It might be amazing, right? But I might not. Yeah, like I, yeah, that's a good point. I'll roll that around my head.
Yeah, I'm constantly rolling on it because I often ask myself the question, it's where do you prioritize things? Should I be training as much as I am versus putting time into the business, vice versa, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's how much you can really hold yourself accountable and true to what's good for you, what you know is good for you, and do that stuff is kind of why I'm always reflecting on it. But you are speaking of the climbing of the ladder, proverbially speaking, that goes with endurance training that we mentioned earlier. You have a fairly big endurance race coming up very soon, don't you? Or in the near future. Your next big event is a big one. It is a big one. And I think that's something I'd like to just get your thoughts on before we close off. What's coming up and how do you feel about it?
So I feel wildly excited. I have done almost no specific training for it because I'm stupid. And so here's my ego that I can't get rid of. I just believe I can do it even without the right training. I just stupidly, and if I can't do it, I don't care. Of course I care, but I don't care. So it's all good. So what am I doing? In 4 weeks time on the 17th of November, 2023, I will be taking part in a race in Singapore. It is 200 miles. So in new money, that's 320 kilometers. It is a single push. So it's not a stage race or anything. It is around the streets of Singapore, so it's not in anywhere like climbing mountains and going over this and that. It's not really going anywhere. It starts and stops at the same place. Singapore's not very big. We're only like 40 kilometers wide by 30 kilometers high, so it goes in and out and back and around and down high streets and through here and up there and down there. Yeah, like this is the first race where I'm going to have to sleep. My previous longest run was 213K, 213. So this is 320K. I think it'll be around 65 hours. You have to sleep, like you can't not. But, you know, I think I'll have 1 or 2 hours sleep the whole way through. And I'm wildly excited because I've never been that plus 200K with another 100K to go world. And I don't know what it's like. And honestly, because of my startup life and business life, I haven't really... I only entered like a week ago and I haven't really trained. So I'm just going to have a crack, man. And 17th of November. So in 1 month.
Oh, that is soon. That is soon. Yeah. 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 When I said coming up soon, I actually corrected myself thinking, oh, I'm not actually sure how soon it is. It could be 2024. Nope. It is soon. It is very much soon.
It is.
So, it sounds like it'll be right up your alley though, in that sort of lap loop. Not really much variation format. There's a nice way to periodize things and break things up into bite-sized chunks in your head. And that sounds like it's your bread and butter. So I'm sure you can put your own ego to the side here. I'm confident you have it in you as well.
I don't. So here's the crazy thing, right? And I think this is about everyone's brain is different. We all have our own lived experiences. So again, I really hope this doesn't sound stupid. I have zero doubt I will not finish. Like I 100% know I'll finish. That doesn't mean I will. That doesn't mean I will. I don't think I won't. I might not. I might break down. I might not finish. And if not, but I never go in thinking I can't. I never go in thinking, I wonder if I can do this. I always believe I can. Doesn't mean I always will. I always believe I can. And I always go in believing it will be awesome and it will be amazing apart from the rashes and all the crap. And I'm crazy excited for it. It starts at 9 p.m. on a Friday and I won't be finished till sometime on Monday. So I will, it's first time I've ever going to be running for 4 days. And as you, I'm sure your listeners know that Singapore is not a cold place. We're on the equator. So it's 32 degrees during the day up and then maybe 27 at night. So, you know, this will be a sweaty, and it'll also be a calorie affair. Like, because you sweat, you have to put a lot of calories in. I think when I did the 200K run, it said I lost, it said I used 28,000 calories. Now, clearly you can't put that in because that's a lot of calories, right? So this is going to be a eating, moving, sleeping, and, you know, not many of us are doing it. You don't get a lot of people in. I'm going to put this out there. I, in my desire, in my delusional world in which I live, I'm going to win. I think everybody thinks they're going to win. Like, I think if I lined up with Usain Bolt, I would win. I know I won't. I know I won't. Like, I understand I won't, but I don't, it doesn't stop me believing, right? Like, I live, I like this idea you can just believe, but I'm going to have a go. I'm going to try not to stop. I mean, not give in. And yeah, man, like, I'm going to get in that pain cave and see what it's like in there. I'm going to be in there for a while, and I hope not to come out until it's all done.
Well, that's it. That's it. Where is the best place for people to connect with you if they want to hear more about what you're up to, or at the very least, see how you get on in a couple of weeks? We're a month out, basically. We're a month out, so it's not too soon. But where is the best place for people to connect with you online?
Sure. Well, so like Business Sense is LinkedIn, and I actually do a bit of running. So I connect running and business on LinkedIn. So I do a little like posts about, hey, if you think your career's hard, well, go running, and that's hard, and both are hard. And you can, you know, my favorite phrase is, you know, you can't beat somebody who doesn't stop. So I like this idea, right? Like, if you just keep on going. So if you follow me on LinkedIn, and I'm on Facebook, I haven't been that much on Instagram. I'm thinking of, you know, putting a, you know, because running for 4 days, I think people might like that. So I'll do more than that. But Facebook, Ned Phillips, just who I am. And on LinkedIn, Ned Phillips. There's not a wild number of Ned Phillipses, which is maybe a good thing. And yeah, you'll find me there, and I will be posting about this long run. And yeah, I will head out on Friday, and you won't hear from me again for 4 days.
Well, I would say I don't envy you, but in some ways, deep down, I think I do. So, Ned, thank you very much.
You do. You do.
And all the best for mid-November, because mid-November and then some, because you might actually spill over into towards the end of November, given the which is a strange thing to say, but it's a choice you've made, and therefore you reap what you sow. You reap what you sow.
You do it.
Thanks again.
You do it. Well, look, thank you. Thank you. And good luck for everything you're doing as well. I know you have a lot of great events coming up. So thanks for being on the show, and good luck with everything, Fergus.